It's time to get behind the lyrics, the music, and the artist. You're listening to Music's Journey on musicsjourney.com. Presented by nowandthenmagazine.com, your music and entertainment online magazine. I'm John Marshall. With her special guest, here's your host, Kim Sear.
My guest today has won tons of awards, nominations, not only for his singing, but also for his incredible songwriting as well. He has won on both sides of the border, and today I am so happy to have here Jason McCoy. He is the founder from the award-winning band, The Roadhammers. Welcome, Jason. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Kim. How are you?
Really good. How's it going out there?
Good. So we're just north of Barrie in Menasing, so a little farm community, you know. It's kind of social distancing like we're all doing right now. We've been doing it for a little while, actually, on the farm. But kids are back in school, so that's changing a little bit. But, you know, we're kind of homebodies, so we're just doing what we do around the farm.
Yeah, because I know that I've seen a couple of your posts that you've been putting on Instagram and stuff with your daughter and the horse and things like that. So I'm sure you've enjoyed spending this time, the quality time when you guys aren't on the road. So I'm sure this is a really unusual thing for you, especially this time of year.
Yeah. Last year, you know, it was so busy. I only had 2 weekends off. This summer, of course, it's all been shut down. So it's been nice to actually have weekends. I've never had that in my life, really.
What have you been doing most of the time?
We bought a boat, which was different for us, and that's, you know, because we've been home, so we've had the chance to get out on the water as a family and really enjoy that. My son, he's all into driving anything with wheels, and the boat has a steering wheel, so that's fine, that'll work. And my daughter, she's the daredevil, so she's been wakeboarding and all that. So.
And the fishing, too, I hear.
Yeah, we've been doing some fishing. That's good, too. We don't catch a whole lot, but we have a lot of fun.
Well, you know what? It's just great being able to spend that time, especially out in the water, because it's been such a hot summer. Like, we've had a great weather-wise for the summer, but I know it hasn't been great being able to go out and tour and do all those things, but at least being able to do that with a brand new boat, that's kind of cool.
Yo, it's not brand new. It's new to us, but yeah, it's been fun. It's been really great.
What about your aviation?
Oh, I haven't flown as pilot in command, I guess, for years now, but go out with friends, you know. I've been thinking about getting back into it, but I keep saying that. I'm not sure if I actually will, but it's all about, it's just time and money, you know.
Mm-hmm. But it's something that you absolutely love to do, right?
Yep. My dad used to have planes, and I learned at a young age, and then my sister went on to fly for Air Canada, so that's what she does now. So I was going to do that, but music took over.
Let's talk about music and how you started out with all this, because I know at 7 years old, that's when you started to play guitar. What were your influences in the home musically?
Oh, my dad and his brother would play, you know, guitar, and his brother would play accordion and things like that, maybe some fiddle at family get-togethers. There was always, you know, George Jones, Johnny Cash records and vinyl at the house. Radio was always on, you know, local country station. When I was a kid, I was born in Barrie, Ontario, but we moved out to Camrose, Alberta when I was a little guy. So my first memories are of Camrose on the farm, and that was the big thing, you know, with the country music and the hog and feed report every hour, and that was life. So those are my first memories, was country life, country music.
But is there anybody in particular, like Merle Haggard, I think is one of your influences. Who else?
Oh, George Jones was a big one. And then when I got into high school, I'd never known anything about rock and roll, really, until I got into high school. I was jamming with some friends and was getting into Bryan Adams and stuff like that. But then Randy Travis came out with his, you know, Storms of Life and Always and Forever. And then Dwight Yoakam came out with, you know, Guitars, Cadillacs. And all that drew me right back into country music because it was the coolest thing going on. And but I never left country. And those would be my, you know, the big ones. Dwight was a big influence, but I sang more like Randy, so it's a bit of an odd hybrid.
Well, I know that, you know, that was just such a change in country music, period, you know, back then with him.
Yeah, it was the first class of the, you know, the kind of the new younger generation, and, you know, Alan Jackson was just on the heels of that, and then there was, you know, a real revolution at the time, and then Garth Brooks came along, and it was just a different, you know, turn of the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I love that you also mentioned in one of your bios that you were a fan of Ed Bruce.
Oh yeah, so I still was like, you know, what I consider old school, and then the new stuff to me still is the, you know, Dwight, Randy, and Garth and all that stuff. So I mean, I was still back in the 70s and 60s. Country was a big thing to me. So they lived alongside my what it would have been my playlist at the time. You know, Ed Bruce was one of my favorite singers and writers as well. I mean, he wrote One for George and Tammy. He wrote all these wonderful, beautiful songs. He wrote Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys for Waylon Willie. And but he just had this huge booming voice, but he just wasn't overly marketable as an artist in a lot of ways. And he just never, he did have number one hits. He had a string of hits, but he was never the superstar that, you know, that his voice, you know, would have dictated that he'd be.
Always one of my favorites. I love My First Taste of Texas and Never Never Loving You. And he had a lot of big hits. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually bought a, I had an old van and we was traveling and did lots of songwriting trips to Nashville, and I could never find any Ed Bruce cassettes or records or anything. So while I was down there, I found this reissue of an Ed Bruce cassette, and I listened to it all the way home, and I could, you know, almost name you the sequence of the greatest hits and all the songs that were all those half times, you know.
Yeah.
Like I had it perfectly timed where I knew, you know, without any count in or anything, how long it was between songs and the downbeat of the next song. And, you know, the tape got stretched. The songs were kind of warbly. So it's almost laughable how much of a fan I am of Ed Bruce. But and almost have had a chance to write with him a couple of three times, but almost don't want to because I just, you know, I don't just want to leave being a fan being a fan.
Is there a favorite song of his, an absolute favorite that is really personal for you?
Oh, I don't think anything personal, just really, there's that halftime thing that was really big through the 70s. I mean, T.G. Shepherd, Conway Twitty, you know, Don't Know a Thing About Love, all that stuff, and all the Ed Bruce stuff. Mm-hmm. There was a halftime feel to the production that was really, really big throughout the late 70s into the early 80s. And I just, you know, nobody did it like, I think Tommy Cash might have been the producer of that. I'm not 100% sure, but those are pulling on some old names, but I just loved the production and his voice was so amazing. The song One by George and Tammy was big to me because I was a big fan of George Jones before the big comeback after he married Nancy and all that kind of stuff and got into the MCA years. And so when they recorded that song, I was just like, you know, of course they would. It's an awesome song. And then I learned that was Ed Bruce who wrote it. And I just loved it. And interesting story about George is that big fan of his all my life, and first song I ever sang on stage was If Drinking Don't Kill Me, Her Memory Will. I was like 12 in my hometown place. Yeah, right. And so then
If the Kool-Aid Don't Kill Me.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know. And so anyway, just having gone through my career, got to meet him a couple of times, and that was really cool. But and then we had a place in Nashville, which backed onto the Woodlawn Cemetery. And he died, and they had the day they were having his big showing or viewing down at the Ryman. I was working in the backyard, and I heard them digging a grave, and I thought, wouldn't that be, you know, so weird if they were actually digging George Jones' grave, you know? So I went back there, and they were. It just kind of brought to light how, you know, it's just the music business. It's mm-hmm. You know, George Jones is George Jones, the guy. He just happens to be a singer. So, but nonetheless, big influence on me.
There's so much, you know, when it comes to story writers and, you know, the people that write songs that don't really see the limelight like the artists do. Is there somebody else that was really important to you as a writer?
Dean Dillon, who wrote a lot of George Strait stuff, you know, Oceanfront Property and all that kind of stuff. Like he's a big one. Mm-hmm. Gosh, as writers, I mean, Conway Twitty, I always thought was an under-celebrated artist in a lot of ways, because mm-hmm. I think he was shunned by, it was either the CMAs or the ACMs. One of them, he never really won that many awards. But he was always looked at as kind of the, you know, the schmaltzy love song sellout kind of guy, right? Mm-hmm. But his songs, like a lot of these songs that he wrote, like That's My Job and stuff like that, like they're just absolutely incredible. And
Stand Time.
I always loved it when he said that, you know, he started out in rock music and worked his way up to country music. I thought that was pretty cool. And his first gig ever was in Hamilton, Ontario.
Really?
His real name's Harold P. Jenkins. And the first band he ever had was Harold Jenkins and the Rockhausers. and they drove up in an old Lincoln, black Lincoln. It was painted flat black, and they painted all these yellow lemons on it because it was a lemon of a car. And that's what they travel around in, and they'd have the doghouse bass on top, and it was kind of this rockabilly band, and then he had Only Make Believe, and next thing you know, the rest is history.
Well, you know what? Sometimes the simplest of things are the greatest of memories, right?
Yeah. Well, I should be a great memory then, because I'm the simplest of things. I'll tell you that. Holy smokes.
And the funniest.
Yeah, right.
I have to tell you, I am one of your biggest fans. Always have been.
Oh, thank you very much.
Because I, not only as a great singer, because you've got that growl that I've always loved, but and that rock edge, you know, to your country music. But at the same time, you are such a great songwriter.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you very much. I it's always been a means to an end, because, you know, when you're starting in this business, you can't get the top drawer songs sometimes from these publishers, right? Because you're unknown. So you kind of are forced to write as much as you can. I've had the good fortune of writing with some great guys and girls. So it's been pretty good run.
Who is the one person that's on the charts right now as a female that you would love to do a duet with and write with?
Well, I'd say Ashley McBride. You know, One Night Standards is one of those songs that are really timeless in their... her lyrics are effortless. You know, it just seems like those are super clever rhymes that are unconventional. It's not like, you know, buy and sky and cry. It's really, I ain't going to ask you where your ring is. The thing is, you know, like these are really effortless rhymes. Mm-hmm. They're very clever. And then that paired with the production of James Joyce, who did all that Eric Church stuff and comes from the rock and roll world. He's really guitar and beat driven. Even though it's extremely traditional country, it's got this really hip edge to it. It's very understated, and I'd love to be a part of that.
Oh, that would be an awesome collaboration. That would be. She is really, really good, and I think that, you know, still understated to how good she really is.
For sure.
Now, you started your career, like you said, on the stage at 12, and, you know, the song that you sang there. What did it mean to you to win? You won a contest as well out in Barrie. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I won I think I was 16. I won a couple hours of recording at Blue Water Sound. A guy named Greg Beacock had a place out here, and still know Greg and his friend here in town. It was my first time in a recording studio. You know, it was everything. It was you know, getting to hear yourself on tape, and it was that, the, you know, like hearing yourself on a voice machine and on a phone. Like you hate it, and it was. I couldn't believe, you know, I don't sound like that. And all these inner arguments. It started the inner turmoil and the self-hatred that I've been able to enjoy all these years. But it was really the first step into, you know, this could be a thing.
Mm-hmm. Because I know that, like, going into the studio had to have been pretty nerve-wracking on your first trip to Nashville. What was that like for you?
Well, the first one I did was I did a record when I was 17 with Ray Griff, and it was a little different. It was like all the musicians were recorded, and all my songs, but I just walked in and sang, and it was, well, no, that's not true. Like, some of the musicians we were still recording, but it wasn't like a typical recording where I would be involved in it. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I met Scott Baggett, who recorded my next records, like Take It From Me, and which eventually led to Born Again Dixieland, all these kind of songs. And we used him on the recording of the Roadhammers, and we've been working together for a long time. So that, you know, that progression was a lot of, you know, a lot of years in between. But it was interesting to go from not being involved in recordings to, you know, I co-produce stuff, you know, and that just means putting in the time and the effort.
Well, it's got to mean an awful lot with the accomplishments that you've had, and same thing with the band, because, like you said, a lot of these artists go in, and those studio players, they play all day long, and it's really hard to match what they can do, because that's what they do nonstop. And to be able to come in and play on your own record and co-produce and do that, it's got to mean a lot.
Well, it takes a long time, and I really don't play on my own records so much. I usually hire, you know, guitar ringers and stuff like that, but if I played on a lot of the Hammer stuff, and that's different, you know, it's just a different animal. They're a little looser as far as the need goes. Those guys are like surgeons, you know, and I'm, you know, you don't need a weekend warrior going in and wasting time. Like, a lot of guys will spend a lot of money in studio time just to feed the ego. But if you got a guy who's got the right setup, and you know, they invest in these tools like a surgeon, right? They've got like the proper Gibson for the Gibson sound, they got the Tele, they got the, all these things. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, just get the right guy and nail it. You know, it's done in 10 minutes.
And they can read the artist really well too, to exactly that sound you're
styles.
Looking for.
Yeah, they can play, you know, Segovia to, you know, to Don Rich. Like, you don't need somebody who's, you know, trying to feed an, unless you can do it, but you don't have to feed an ego just to say, I played on my own record.
Mm-hmm. But you do love playing the guitar, and it's something that does mean an awful lot to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, but like, I mean, Hunter Hayes played, I think, almost every instrument on his first record. But, you know, when you hear Wanted, do you really care? Like,
true.
And honestly, though, you don't, right? You're like, that's a great song, and he's delivering it great. And even if they wrote it or not, you might go, oh, well, that's cool, but whatever. I like the song. But, you know, Barry Manilow didn't write, I write the songs. So, like, you know,
that's true.
Nobody cares. It's all the best song wins, and it's just the final rule.
Well, you do play the guitar really, really well.
Oh, thanks.
And who is your favorite guitar player?
Jerry Reed.
Any song in particular that you like as a guitar riff that stands out for you?
Well, there's a few of them, like The Claw, which is an instrumental, which is, you know, there's a lot of guys out there who learn it, you know, verbatim, and it's like, mm-hmm. oh man, you're awesome. And I've learned it too, and people go, oh man, you're awesome. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm just a parrot. Like, imagine thinking the ways he does, because he thinks everything in a backbeat. And all the stuff with Jerry Reed was so funky. Like, it was so Alabama Wildman funky. Like, it was James Brown good. Seriously. Like, if you listen to just listen to the backbeat of his thumb versus what he's grabbing with the, you know, rest of his hand. It's staggering. It really is. Really, and how good he was. Yeah,
song.
Knock him in the head with a stump.
Bumblebee stands out for me too when I think about, you know, guitar riffs and just the stuff that, you know, is done.
Oh yeah, totally.
There's some really great guitar players out there. Amazing guitar players. Now, you started out with your first win as a male vocalist artist of the year for CCMAs. What did that feel like for you for that first win?
I hated it, because I didn't feel like I belonged in the country music club. You know, I was kind of just felt like this outsider dude that, like, I didn't know. I don't know. I just wasn't in the circle of, you know, the music business and all that kind of stuff, and still not really. I'm not really in there, you know. So I felt like I was at a party that I wasn't really invited to. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to act. I always feel like with those things, there's the group, and then I'm outside the group, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it felt really weird. It felt great to win, but wasn't really sure how to take it all.
What do you look at as success as a whole?
Well, I'm not there yet. If I felt comfortable in my own skin and pleased and comfortable with something I produced, I think I'd feel good. But it always feels like I have to rush on to the next thing. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know if I ever feel like I've done anything.
Is there a bucket list for you?
No. Survive. Surviving's a good bucket list.
Mm-hmm. Yep. When it comes down to just being the simple joys of life, what is the best thing for you?
When I forget everything else and just get to be, you know, husband and dad.
Yeah.
But that's pretty rare times. But mm-hmm. yeah, for sure. When I get to exhale.
And the value of today and what we've gone through, that's part of the good that comes out of all this, right?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I'm luckier than most. You know, I do some radio, so I'm the only musician in Canada with an actual job, which is wonderful. But there's a lot of people who have been downsized, losing their jobs or you know, scale back in pay. And it's really humbling to know that we actually, you know, get to go to work and do what we do every day.
Now, you were doing a syndicated show. I know a number of stations used to have you on the weekends.
Yeah. Years ago, I did one, and it was weekends. It was fun. It was a pre-recorded kind of thing. And that was cool. And then I got to do some work with a station in Kitchener. And then I did some, you know, other things, like pre-recorded kind of weekly things. So it's always been part of what I do. And then just got asked to be part of the what was then the Kix 106 team in Orillia, which is now Pure Country 106. So do mornings there with Carrie. And it's a lot of fun. It's different being on that side of the equation, you know.
Do you like getting up at 3 a.m.?
No, not at all.
Nobody does.
John hates that shift.
Yeah, well, I do. There's parts of it I like. I like the fact there's no traffic and you feel like you're kind of moving through society at a, you feel like a bit of a pirate, you know, you're zigging while everybody else is zagging. That's pretty cool. But it catches up with you. I mean, you get tired at night and the end of the week, you're kind of a basket case, but you know, it sure is nice to still be part of the music business, but not, you know, like it feels like when you're just touring musician, you're kind of like a free range chicken. You got to fight for every little bit. Right. And, I'm really lucky.
Are you allowed to play your own music?
Allowed, totally, and I do as often as I can. If you know the hour comes up short, I always say to Carrie, "Well, if they're not going to fill it, I will." Yeah. Guess what?
I've got a 2-minute song. I've got a 2.5 minute song.
Yeah, I got everything you need. What do you need? What do you need?
How do you extra the song? There's me.
That's me, and it's awesome, and you like it. You're going to get more of it. Here's some more of me, because you deserve it.
Every musician out there just got jealous, really jealous.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, they can fire me at any time. I do have to remember that.
In 2005, you had a hit that you had enough hits at that point to put together, you know, a hit album, and that included a brand new single that was titled "She Ain't Missin' Me." It's one of the ones that we wanted to play right now, so we'll talk about it as soon as we come right back.
Well, she don't wake up and call my name anymore, and she don't pick up on the first rain anymore. I can hear it in her voice, there's somebody else, and I got nobody to blame but myself. She ain't missing me.
Jason McCoy from his greatest hit CD, and You Ain't Missin' Me, one of my favorites, that's for sure. If you're a singer, a band, or manager, contact Effects Media for photography, artwork for posters, events, or album covers. We handle it all. Email info@effects.media.com. Now, back to Music's Journey with your host, Kim Sear.
That was such a favorite song for me, and I know for a lot of people. What did that song mean to you?
I don't know that I wrote about any specific person. So lyrically, it was kind of one of those songs that just got kind of jammed off of these chords. I was inspired by kind of a couple of Dwight Yoakam records that were going on at the time. And I think Sheryl Crow. So I like all those, you know, kind of open jangly chord things, you know? And I think it was a time where country music was kind of a split, whether it was going to go more pop or more traditional. And I think that was kind of like a good option right up the middle. So it was more just a guitar-driven kind of riffy kind of vibe and really enjoyed it. Like, it was just an unthought song. Like, it wasn't overly deep, you know?
What has been the most significant change that you think you've seen in your own writing, you know, being a veteran in the music industry and doing this for so long?
Oh, I don't know. I think songwriting is one of those things that changes all the time. It's almost like being in the tech world that even though there's only eight notes, like, you know, you get through a phase of country, like, you know, 80s country is one thing, 90s was another. And the way they'd say certain things, everything would change. You know, it used to be like, you know, lyrics would be real ambiguous, like, you know, girl, I, you know, love you and you're a wide open sky or whatever, all these kind of, you know, picture paintery kind of things, right?
Come on, give it to us, Jason.
Whatever it is. And then, not everybody can do this. But then, you know, you listen to Hardy now and it's like these really spot on hard pieces of furniture that are in the song. Like they talk about sitting in a CVS parking lot and like you see that in your head, right? You know, mm-hmm. Need the street light and all these kind of things. And so the way that you throw a phrase is different. Mm-hmm. So I just want to think long answer longer. Like, I don't know that I'm the biggest change I've seen in my writing is that it always has to change. Like, you know, you think things are faster and paint bigger pictures with less words now. And that's just the style. Mm-hmm. Like, it might go back to more poetic stuff later, but like, at Ashley McBride's song, you know, like it describes this lobby and all these kind of things and these people with, they just throw in phrases that are almost fragmented, but all fit together somehow. Whereas before things were more long drawn out sentences.
Yeah. That creativity has really changed in that approach.
It's not better or worse. It's just different. And then it'll come around a different way. Like, you know, in 5 years, it's just going to, country music is going to have a different angle to how the lyrics flow.
And you see that a lot, you know, when it comes to whatever's going on in the world. And it just depends on, you know, the artist too, whether they write from a personal space or, you know, whether, you know, as you said, songs are handed to them and those are the ones that the publishers want them to release. So, you know, it really is, you know, what's going around at that time. Lyrically for you, whether or not you've released the song or you haven't released the song, is there one that means a lot to you?
I, you know, I think every songwriter would pick their most poignant ballad of, you know, of love and all this kind of stuff. But for me, because you mentioned Jerry Reed, I always loved the frenetic kind of wacky off the cuff stuff. Like I'd rather be happy than right. Like, mm-hmm. I love that because it's so funny and it's just so, I like the clever kind of, you know, I want you to love me like my dog, Billy Currington stuff, right? So I'd rather be happy than right. I love that. I love, Chris and I wrote Hall and Ass for the Roadhammers, which yes. I know it sounds like just a stupid song to pick, but man, every lyric in that song is so tight. It is just, it is awesome. I think it's great. I could pick love songs and all that stuff. And I mean, Born Again, Dixieland was such a big hit for me that of course that's got a special thing and all that. And I love that because Born Again, Dixieland preceded like Keith Urban's Love mm-hmm. Somebody Like You by several years. And it had that four on the floor thing and then that banjo roll, which just knocked it out of the park. And that was one of those things that, you know, it's like, I love this sound. And I hear Keith Urban doing it. And I was like, that's exactly the vibe, right? Like, that's exactly the thing. And I think, like, from a production standpoint, I guess that one's got a special spot. But I love the lyrical Tetris of all those other wacky, frenetic songs. I love those. I love I Lie, too. I mean, that's a
good one, too. Who does the videos for these? Because they are hilarious. Like, who decides the, yeah, because when you watch them, you can't help but laugh.
Oh, it's just the guys and I just being jerks.
What is your favorite prank? Because I know you're a prankster. I know you guys love to do that.
Favorite? Oh, I got prescription strength Anvisol, like it's super, super strong stuff, like not like you get over the counter. And I put it on their microphones before we did this big show. So like halfway through the first song, I could see them, their lips, and they were all drooling, and like they couldn't sing the words without sounding like blah, 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 you know.
Oh, it was God. Awesome. Wow. That's the first one. I've never heard that one.
Yeah, they hated me.
That's funny.
They didn't trust me for years. I still don't trust me. I don't trust me either. If I had it again, I'd do it again.
You kind of made a career out of the prank stuff after a while with you guys, because you were doing it to like Doc Walker and to quite a few of the other bands. What was the favorite one that you did to them?
I don't know if I did this to them. I forget who we did this to.
Billy, too.
We put Vaseline all over some drummer's pedals one time just before he went on stage. So he couldn't properly hit his hi-hat or kick. That was pretty good. I forget who that was. But he got pretty mad at us.
Oh, that's so funny.
So when you're playing with Jason McCoy, it's BYOM. Bring your own mic.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Totally.
But you talk about the ballads, because you guys have written them and you've done some really good ones. And one of your recent ones was All Your Favorite Bands. Have you ever written one for your wife?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I didn't write this one. My friend Odie did. It's off of, I think it's off the Everything album. It's And I Love You. I love that song. I've written songs for her that I guess I haven't recorded, too. Like, I mean, I'm not.
Can you share a little bit?
Nah.
Share just come on, just a little bit.
Well,
just
I don't know.
A few notes.
There's
for
been
us.
A few of them, but I don't really write a whole lot of personal stuff, right? I don't write a lot of autobiographical stuff. I kind of just, you know, just because you make a movie doesn't mean it has to be about your life, right? But some people are really autobiographical. I'm just not.
But you can sing us a little bit, right? Just a little.
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know what it would be. I'll have to think about it. I don't know.
Well, what about She Is Good For Me? Talk about that song.
Oh, yeah, that's one. That's autobiographical for sure.
I'm digging you out here.
Yeah, no, that's great. No, thanks for the prompt on that, because I completely forgot that. But that's definitely about Treen, because, I mean, I'm the king of doing everything that's not good for me. You know, whether it be just, you know, simple things like coffee or any of the stupid things you go through in life. And yeah, she's always good for me. She's like a centering ground point. And I think any guy who's, you know, been lucky enough to find somebody in their lives like that would definitely say that.
Well, let's play that one right now. She's Good For Me, and we'll talk about the song as soon as we come back.
Every now and then I find myself lighting a cigarette, even though I quit. Now with a Coke and Crown, that smoke goes down so easily, but it ain't good for me. She's good for me. She knows how to smooth my edges, talk me down off those ledges when I ain't thinking straight. Yeah, she keeps the faith. She stands up to all my demons. Brother, she's the only reason. smooth my edges, talk me down off those ledges when I ain't thinking straight. Oh, she keeps the faith. She stands up to all my demons. Brother, she's the only reason that I ain't who I used to be. Yeah, she's good for me. Every now and then I find myself lighting a cigarette, even though I quit.
Jason McCoy and She's Good For Me from the album Everything. I'm John Marshall. You can check out Music's Journey on Facebook at Music's Journey Podcast. Like it, check it out. You can check out all our podcasts on our website, musicsjourney.com, or nowandthenmagazine.com for all the latest news and information on your favorite singers and bands. Now let's get back to Music's Journey Podcast with her special guest, the man with no bucket list. Here is Jason McCoy with Kim Sear.
Boy, it sounds like I don't have much future.
Everybody now that comes on the show, they got to watch everything they say because he's going to hit the last thing you just said.
That's all good.
Now, this.
Thanks for the prompt on that. I completely forgot about she's good for me. I'm like, yeah, no, nothing. I don't think I've written anything for my wife.
Well, this one lyrically, I think, speaks to, you know, a lot of people when it comes to, you can put any situation to this song, but I think that, you know, when you're talking about smoothing my edges and dealing with my life's demons, what has been your vice and one hurdle that you've had to get over?
My vice, whining, but I still haven't got over it. I need some good help there. I don't know what has been my vice. My vice is caffeine. I know that. I don't know if I'll ever get over that, but, you know, just some drinking vices and things like that over years ago, you know, but just growing up, I mean, just being immature, that's been a kind of a, I think being immature is an excuse, I think, a lot of times too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing, but she allows me to be immature in other ways too, so that's not so bad.
What's the best advice you've ever been given?
Oh, you know, if in music, if it sounds right, it is. And, you know, it's hard to take that advice when you're doing something because you feel once you've had commercial success, it's really hard not to want to pursue that again.
Mm-hmm.
So you think if you've had a top 10 hit, then they all have to be top 10 hits. It doesn't necessarily mean that's true. You can write something that's not even close to what you did before. And if it feels like that's what you want to do, you should do it.
As a creator and a songwriter and as a veteran in the business, I know that just in the earlier parts of our conversation here, you've talked about not really focusing, you know, on the awards and what they really mean. It's just more, I think, more of the music that feels good to you that you're putting out there that connects with the fans, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's the business side of it and there's the music side of it. And you try to keep the music side away from the business. And it has to be so good that the business side comes and wants to monetize it, right? And sometimes I get the equation backwards where I try to write something that's monetizable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you put your brain in the jar and put it away for a while and you just write a song, that's way better than trying to think your way onto radio.
Do you think that, like, when you look back at what your accomplishments have been, what do you think you've done really well?
Entertain. You know, that's probably been my
the
one thing.
Do.
Like, I don't know that I'm really a songwriter or a guitar player or whatever. I find that I'm a journeyman in a lot of those things because they're a means to an end. I didn't set out wanting to be one particular thing, but through it all, the one consistent thing for me has been, well, I got to be the biggest goof in the room. So might as well take that onto stage, you know what I mean? And that's worked in my favor a lot of times.
What is your favorite moment as a solo artist?
Oh, I don't know if I have one. I mean, playing the Grand Ole Opry was pretty cool.
Yes.
I've done that a few times. I don't know that I have one particular thing, though, because, I mean, there's other times where,
you sing really good one night, right? And I don't know exactly what town that was in, or I don't know what guitar solo I really was digging one time, or, you know, there's a lot of little things along the way. And, I honestly don't know. I've thought about that too, because you always try to be prepared. Hey, what was your favorite gig? Or what was the worst gig? Or what was the most memorable list? It's like, I don't really know. Like, they're all cool for different reasons.
Now, you were the front man and creator for the Roadhammers, and you guys have done unprecedented success throughout Canada and the U.S. and picking up 5 CCMA awards, which includes Group of the Year win and Juno Award wins and 5 more Juno nominations. You guys have done so well. What was the whole idea of bringing this band together with Chris and Clayton?
Well, I just come off the 01, I guess my second win as male artist, and Sin's Eyes and Angels came off us great solo success. I had no idea what to do as a solo artist, and country music was really fragmenting again. It was the Shania Twain was getting real pop, and I forget, you know, who the real country artists were. Alan Jackson was still on the charts, things like that. I didn't know where to go, so I was talking to Ted Ellis, who ran CMT at the time. I said, well, I'm thinking of just doing like a little album of trucker classics, and, you know, because I really love this album I had, I was listening to when I was a kid, or from when I was a kid. And I said, well, maybe we'll put together like an all-star band and like a Wilburys kind of thing. And I thought, maybe what if we put a band together just to record this? And it was during the time that, you know, reality shows, I guess you'd say, came about. So we did a documentary kind of thing of putting the band together, and that's how the whole thing launched. That was you know, it was all Ted kind of getting behind it, and that it just exploded.
Did you expect that kind of success with the band?
No. If I had, would have started with that. If I had realized that's where it was at. But it's it was a good outlet for me, because I can't sing a lot of rock and roll stuff. Clay can, and then I don't have that rock and roll language as fluently as he would. I don't speak blues language as fluently as Chris would, and I put it all together. And it's what we do on the Country Mouse, right? So it worked out really well.
What did it feel like being able to be creative with the three of you all together? You know, like, that's got to be so different from the solo careers.
Sure. Well, people say, what's better, being a solo band or a solo actor in a band? And I said, both great for different reasons, because one, you make all the decisions, and one, you don't. And those are both great things. But I think when you're recording with the guys, it's great, because you know that, well, I can't sing this part, but this guy can. And I can't play this part, but this guy can. Just me, it's going to get done. It's just, it's going to be this thing that creates us.
Mm-hmm. Let's play one of the biggest hits right now from 2017 called Crazy About You with the Roadhammers.
My
at you and say that I'm still crazy. I'm still crazy. I'm still crazy. It's true. Crazy about you. But I'm still crazy. I'm still crazy. I'm still crazy. It's true. Crazy about you. Crazy about you.
That is Jason McCoy, Clayton Bellamy, and Chris Byrne, the Roadhammers, and Crazy About You. Now back to Music's Journey with her special guest, and yes, he is still crazy. The one, the only Jason McCoy, here is Kim Sear.
That was such a great song, Crazy About You, from your album, The Squeeze. Talk to us about that and how that one came about.
Yeah, talking about songs I wrote for my wife, like in the short form of it. It wasn't too autobiographical perhaps, but I'm still crazy about her, and I just always find myself rushing home from the airport after shows, and if I want to be anywhere, it's just at home with her and just hanging out. And it's nice to have that after all these years together. And I remember writing that song. It was in our kitchen here, and writing with Chris and Clay, and I wanted to write something that was kind of like Waylon Jennings, kind of that beat, and it worked out great. Gavin Brown was a producer on that, Noble Street in Toronto, and it was so effortless to record. It was so fun. Like, we didn't have to second guess anything.
And it was received so well by the fans, and it was just such a great upbeat song. Everybody loves that song. Really great song.
Oh, it's great. Awesome. Well, thank you.
Really great. Now, when you guys are on the road, is there a favorite tour memory you guys have, or some things that you can share that go on in the bus? Like, we know, as I said, there's got to be somebody that's got to be a sleeper. We know somebody's a pranker. Somebody's got to be the A-type personality, right?
Well, we're all the pranksters at different times, different reasons, things like that. Lots of stuff going on the bus. Like, I've been doing it so long. There's so many different ones. I remember one time I pranked myself, didn't mean to, but I got up in the middle of the, well, it was about 3 a.m. We're up in northern BC, and there was a hotel, and it had like a truck stop gas station on one side, and then on the other side was your regular gas station. And we go in, and the bus stops, and if you got to get off the bus, you usually leave a hat or something on the driver's seat so they know you're off. I thought, I'm just going to be a second, so I go in, and went to the candy bar machine, whatever. I got something from the lobby of this hotel, and I walk out, and I go, the bus isn't here. Oh, it must be on the other side where the other gas station was. And I, no, that's not it. It's not there either. I was like, oh, boy. So the bus was gone. And the problem was, this is cell phone era, and nobody remembers any phone numbers. So this is like probably 2 a.m. in BC, and my wife's sleeping, and everybody in the office in Toronto's not in, and I'm like, well, I'll just call so-and-so on the bus. Oh, I don't know their number. So I'll call, I don't know their number. Well, okay, I only know my wife's number, and she's sleeping. So finally, I woke her up, and she had to call somebody on the bus, get them to come. It took an hour. They were gone an hour, so it was an hour there, like an hour away from the hour back, and then back an hour. So it took us 3 hours to get back on track. Oh, man. So I pranked myself pretty good.
What is the one prank that's been done to you that has been epic?
Oh, boy. I don't know. Oh, yeah. We were in Montreal, and we had a night off. So we parked the bus, and we thought we're going to get a hotel room. It's going to be great. We had the bus to sleep on. So you just get one hotel room, and everybody showers, and they get extra towels and all that stuff. So and we were just getting ready to go out in the town. I'm like, you guys all have a shower. I'll have one last. And it's all cool. Everything's great. Take your time. And just as I'm stepping into the shower, I pull the shower curtain back. And there's all the guys that cracked the door open. They had all the
all the coffee packs. They had like 8 coffee packs, instant coffee, and they all huck them at me. And I just looked like I crawled through a pile of horse crap and it was like everywhere. And man, that just went all over the bathroom. Of course, I'm totally like the boss, right? I'm like, okay, guys, that was really funny. You got to clean up the bathroom because I don't want to get hit with the damage deposit. Like, Captain, no fun. I'm the dad.
That's funny.
That was a good prank. That was a good one.
That's a good one. Well, we'll just have to wait to see which new ones come up because I'm sure they're going to up that one for no problem.
We'll have to get touring again for that to happen, for sure.
Well, let's hope that happens soon. It's got to be so hard for you guys, especially with the new songs that you've come out with, you know, this year. You know, We Are One is such a special song. That's one we have to talk about right now. Tell us about this very, very special song that you created for all of us.
Oh, well, actually, it was my friend Jim Paetta, who owns Barry Colts here and in town, and he and I wrote Zamboni for the Hammers a while back, and this whole COVID thing hit, and then during lockdown, he called me and had an idea for a song, so we wrote this thing over Skype or whatever it was, and then I thought it'd be cool to get musician friends to play on it, just they have their own recording set up to their houses, so we did that, and then I thought the thing needs a choir on it, and I was telling my daughter, who was 13 at the time, Grace, I said, it'd be great to have a choir on this, and in the Harlem Gospel Choir, but I mean, how am I going to do that? I mean, it's a pandemic, and they're in New York, which is the epicenter, and she found a contact for them on the website, and said, well, why don't you call them? You'll never know, so I sent an email, and she got me the contact info, and they called me right back, and agreed, and then we got them to record all their parts in isolation. We put it all together, and then we got, you know, Jim Hicks on our brothers, Ed Robertson from the Bare Naked Ladies, and then Haley Jensen from Australia, and Jessica Falk from Sweden, and it just, the list goes on and on. It just turned into this great thing, and it's I'm so proud of it.
Yeah, and we just really hope that we can keep this one going, and we're going to play it right now. This is We Are One by Jason McCoy and Friends.
World of worry, world of change, world of lives rearranged, joined together in song, we are one, we are one. We have doubts, we have fears, we share the hurt, we share the tears, we are here, we're not alone, we are one. We are one. We are one. Yeah, the miles may divide us, but the love will unite us. We will rise and overcome. We are one.
We are one.
We are one.
We are one.
One world, one fight.
Jason McCoy and some pretty special friends there, and We Are One. For professional show productions with sound and lighting, contact Scott Taylor at Professional Sound. All size venues and all genres of music. Get the professional edge. They've been working with the Traveling Barn Dance for years. Contact Scott for a quote. ProfessionalSound@hotmail.com. Once again, that's ProfessionalSound@hotmail.com. Once again, back to Music's Journey with her special guest. Here is Kim Sear.
This was such a special song, and I think it is now and will be for, you know, a long time coming. And the message that you had behind it, because when this virus started, as you said, it started with one person, but, you know, things can change, the power of one person, and then together, you know, in isolation, what we can do to be able to help one another. Talk about that a little more.
Yeah, that's really what the whole message is. Eh? It's been great, great message, and everybody jumping on to lend support really meant a lot.
And we're really hoping that, you know, fans will get back on board with this again and start replaying this, because, you know, we've got some tough times coming up ahead. And I think that this is just a reminder that, you know, now that summer's over, we still want to have the fun that's here and the quality family time, and remembering that, you know what, we can just reach out and say hi to somebody next door. And, you know, we can reach out and somebody that we know that's in trouble, and just lend a hand, whether or not we're just letting that person know it's a virtual hug, to just letting them know that you're there. We all can make a difference. And that song is so important. We Are One by Jason McCoy and very special friends. So I'm hoping that, you know, we can get that one back up and going for people to keep playing, because it's such an important message. And thank you for doing that.
Well, thanks for playing it.
Now, I know that there's a few other songs that we wanted to talk about. All your favorite bands, because that one to me is a very special song. So let's listen now to All Your Favorite Bands by the Roadhammers on Music's Journey.
Late night drives and hot French fries, friends around the country, Charlottetown to good old Thunder Bay. When I think of you, you still got on that hat that says let's party. I hope that thing is never thrown away. I hope that life without a chaperone is what you thought it'd be. I hope your brother's El Camino runs forever. I hope the world sees the same person that you've always been to me, and may all your favorite bands stay together. Now I'm just waking up and I'm still kind of dreary, so don't quote me. One eye open, some people come
The Roadhammers, and that is the softer side of the Roadhammers with all your favorite bands. I'm John Marshall. Now let's get back to Music's Journey once again with her special guest, Jason McCoy. Here is Kim Sear.
It is a ballad that, you know, showing the other side of the Roadhammers. Let's talk about that one.
Yeah, so that was Clay's idea. It was a band called the Dawes, and he played it for us. And we were just like, oh, it's so cool. I wonder, like, we should do that. So we started playing it in our live shows. And then we needed another song to record for this one session. We thought, oh, let's do that. So we did it, put the tracks down. He came in and sang it pretty much one take. Like, normally, you know, you have to sing many times, put different passes together. But that was what you hear is pretty much what he did. And it just, it's just one of my favorite tracks.
It's just unusual to be able to hear that side of you guys. And it was so, you know, so nice. Really, really nice, because you guys did it really well. And
our biggest hit to date has actually been one of our, you know, our ballads, which was I've Got the Scars to Prove It, which is a big number one for us. But I mean, it's all just a matter of, you know, message and right place, right time. But all your favorite bands was just felt like the right thing to say at the time.
And it worked. And we're just so glad you guys released that one. Talk about Zamboni. Zamboni is such a fun song. And again, you know, at the right time. So talk about that one.
Yeah. So Jim Payetta, my friend who has the Barry Colts here, we were writing songs and we thought, you know, what's something the Hammers haven't written about? Like, he's written about everything with wheels. And I was like, well, I don't know. You got a Zamboni in your ice rink. Ha ha. So we well, that's not so stupid. Let's do that. So we wrote it. And we thought, well, what's the groove that all sporting events, you know, need? And that's that, you know, that thing. And it just happened so easy, you know. But every once in a while, you write a song and like you got the whole song except one line isn't quite right. And I can't remember what we had originally, but the line, "I drive the big wheel, king of the toys," is what we ended up with. But I think it was like 6 months of me walking around going, whatever we had, whatever line was, I can't remember what it was, but it was like, it's not right. It's just not right. And then all of a sudden it was like, "I drive the big wheel, king of the toys." I'm like, yeah, that's it. that's the deal right there. Because all the, you know, we're talking about hockey games, all these kids go there, and everybody, like all ages. You're like, yeah, the hockey's good, but everybody wants to drive a Zamboni. Like, come on.
And it became like an anthem for everybody at the arenas, right?
It is just awesome. We're so happy with it. And yeah, they played all the games, and it's one of my favorite tracks.
Well, I think it is for a lot of people. And
including Tim Hortons.
That's right.
That's right.
But that's just been a lot of fun. And I know that any time that we're talking to any of the hockey teams, it's just one that everybody just loves to play and they like to lead with. So it's just such a cool tune. What a great song. Let's listen to Zamboni, the latest hit from the Roadhammers on Music's Journey.
Zamboni, Zamboni,
Roadhammers and Zamboni. You're listening to Music's Journey. I'm John Marshall, back with your special guest. Once again, here is Kim Sear.
There's something else that you did this year, and I know that it isn't the first year you've done it, but with the TELUS Ride for Dad. Let's talk about that, because it's such an important message, and I know that you guys weren't able to do it the same way you've done it before, but you still made it happen, and let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, I didn't do much of anything. It's the folks at Ride for Dad who do it all. I just, I guess, honorary ride captain is my role. But really, I got involved, a friend of a friend, years and years ago, just at local ride here. And then, I was doing it for 10 years. And then my dad actually was diagnosed with prostate cancer and was a survivor. And that was due in great part to the fact that early detection and treatment had come so far. Now, one of the things I really found important about TELUS Ride for Dad is that they raise funds for research and awareness. And then when they have the ride up here, at least the one in Huroni and Orillia, they have researchers from Toronto come up, the actual doctors who receive the money from the ride. Mm-hmm. They come up and talk about, hey, here's what we've done in the last year. This is the treatment protocols have changed, as the treatment and detection has changed, and now we've gone from 5 years ago this to where we're at now, and the survival rate is this. And I was like, wow. So we're seeing these guys who, you know, your entry fee, or you raise, you know, $100, or you raise $1,000, or whatever you're raising, and then it actually goes to a real doctor that you get to meet, and it's for real, it's showing real results. So I was like, I can get behind this. So this year, we're going to do the big rides because they're in communities all throughout Canada. Mm-hmm. But we're doing the ride alone together. But the bottom line is you can download a route in your area, and then you collect pledges and you go around and you do the ride and post on social media as you go. Mm-hmm. And it's been great. But we can't wait to get back because, you know, having all those hundreds of bikes together in one big ride is really something to see. But mm-hmm. It's more of the collective support of everybody involved, and that's the thing. There is really a big ride going on across Canada at all times, because it's all these people, even though they're riding, you know, alone together, they're still riding as one group.
It's really important to the chapters too, you know, to be able to get behind, you know, something like this. And, you know, it was such a great idea to be able to get people to do. Some people were just taking their little GoPro cameras and putting it on their bike and going on and showing the tour that they went on. And, you know, being able to do that by themselves or doing it with a few bikes, you know, or doing it in a way that's safe, social distancing. And, you know, it was such a great idea. And
The folks at in Ottawa is where it started, and the whole thing about it is that, you know, they've said, you know, prostate cancer hasn't stopped because of COVID, neither can we. So mm-hmm. and that's the driving force behind it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are suffering, you know, with cancer, and especially, you know, with COVID, there's just, you know, so much more vulnerability than ever before. But to see the results, you know, these guys have done, and to know that the money goes straight to the research, and, you know, it does help so many people at a time that's needed the most. And I think it's just such a great opportunity.
Right on.
Now, with perspective when it comes to COVID, and we're talking about how things have gone in the last couple of months, how do you feel has changed for you, especially as a parent?
Changed for me, I would mm-hmm. say, maybe just, you know, being aware of that, not being aware, but just noticing that, you know, our extracurricular activities aren't the same, you know, having friends or gatherings, things like that, or the kids, you know, aren't going out with dad all the time to do these shows around Ontario and things like that. So there's a lot less of that. You know, hockey's different, you know, doing ball hockey, we're standing in different spots. The ice hockey's coming back in, and there's certain protocols. So just being aware of that there's all these restrictions, and now it affects the kids. It affects their friend base, you know, it affects their, the way they hang. Mm-hmm. And just those extracurricular activities. My daughter was into rugby and things, which isn't happening this year. And so a lot of that is you just notice that hole in their schedule.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just something that, you know, takes us back. I think we've never seen it in our generation, but, you know, our parents certainly have. And, you know, for the kids to now see that, you know, this is possible, but we've gotten through it before. And, you know, well, we've been able to adapt and to be able to do things that really, you know, mean something in life and something that everybody's going to remember, because we are going to remember this one. And
It's definitely changed lives, and it's it's changed the world and affected literally the world. So it's forced us to slow down in certain ways, and other people, you know, talk to them and it's they've sped up, things have gotten busier. So I'm not really sure, you know, what the outcome will be or when it'll be done, and nobody knows, but hopefully we'll take a little lesson from this, that we don't have to be as busy as we once were.
Well, the one thing we do want to do is thank you guys, you know, for all the musicians and songwriters out there, because without music, the world would be a completely different place. And, you know, I just don't think it would be the same and on any level. So thank you for all that you guys do to provide us that music.
Oh, wow. Well, it's just good to be part of the industry doing that. So I just, you know, support these musicians when you see them doing these online things, and when there's, you know, those virtual tip jars and stuff, that means a great deal for sure.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have been so inventful. Like, everybody's like doing things on, you know, online and doing different kinds of performances, the drive-ins, all that they're doing just to bring that music to people that need it right now. And that's just been such a great, great summer for that. Now, you had a very special drive-in yourself last weekend. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Happy belated birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Jason.
Happy birthday to you. The big 5-0.
Hey, that's a big one. Come on.
Lots to talk about. Let's move on. You know, somebody was like, there's the birthday boy. And I'm like, yeah, I'm 50. I think we can drop the boy part.
Or there's still that kid inside. Come on.
Right? I don't know where he is, but he takes a lot of Advil.
Now, Shane and Stacy were out with you for that one, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, we did a show in Ancaster. It was an acoustic show, which I love to do because there's so much fun. You get to just talk to everybody and be a goofball for a little while, and it was fun. But acoustics it's really hard to beat when you're hanging with Shane and Stacy, because they're so, you know, Western Swing Authority, they're so talented.
Yes.
And that whole bunch with Western Swing are just the best. I mean, they're the best musicians we have.
Well, I know they were pretty excited to be able to go out there, so we had heard about it the day before when we were interviewing them, so I'm glad that went so well.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'd do that every day if I could.
Now, you've been out with Tim Hicks as well, too, right?
Yeah, actually, I wrote a song with him for Coors Banquet. Was doing the One Horse Town series, and so we had a song that we recorded and released called One Horse Town. And that was a lot of fun. We're label mates, and so, you know, obviously, I write with him too quite a bit, and doing a show with him in Peterborough, doing a few shows with him, so he's always a great hang, and he's like the he's like Canada's, you know, he's like the Brian Adams for country, right? He's our Canadian
rocker boy.
Yeah, like he's the rocking country guy, and so his show's great. He's a great guy on and off stage, and just a treat. I'm so glad we have him on the Canadian landscape, because he's just the best.
Well, you've got another very, very special day coming up, and that's on October 4th for the CMAO. So talk to us about that, because you are hosting again this year. Yay!
Yeah, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I'm so amazed every time they ask me to host. I'm honored, quite honored, honestly. I feel like, wow, is there, you know, maybe it's got to be somebody you can get who's good.
No, we're not changing this one. That landscape stays the same.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Okay. Well, it's a little different this year, because it's going to be a drive-in style, from what I understand, at Westerner in London. I'm pretty excited about it, though, because it's, you know, you get to hang with the best, you know, musicians there are. And, you know, when I was a kid, I was always felt like, as a musician, as an early younger recording artist, I always felt like I was trying to justify being country and being from Ontario, because Alberta always had the stranglehold on the, you know, the artists winning the awards. But we've got the biggest, best and brightest right here in Ontario now. And so it leaves you saying, Alberta who, you know, and which I'm sure this will go over very well in Alberta, but you know what I mean? It's just
here comes those tweets.
Wait. But just think about it. It's just amazing. The artists we have here in Ontario. So it'd be, you know, hosting what is the epicenter of what we have to offer is amazing.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Canada period for what we've got when it comes to country music and artists now. Like, we have put ourselves on the map. You know, it's just been amazing for what we've
produced. We are the map. I mean, absolutely. You got Celine Dion, you got, you know, she changes pop music. You got John Candy, who changes comedy, like Jim Carrey. You got Wayne Gretzky, who changes hockey. I mean, you know, these people don't just go, you know, Bryan Adams changing, you know, his side of rock and roll. Like, these people aren't just going out and, you know, contributing to their art form. They're actually innovators. And so there's certainly something in the water in Canada for sure. And it's fantastic.
Yeah. And it's going to stay because the artists are just getting better and better. And it's pretty incredible, the talent that we've got here in Canada. So lots to be proud of there. So we're so glad to see that you are going to be doing this again, because this has just been so amazing. You know, every time I've seen you on the stage, and you're just so darn funny.
And oh gosh! Well, Viral Mobs is the one behind the whole thing. She's got a great team, but she's like she's just a tornado, and she's just a force to be reckoned with. So,
well, CMWs, I've been working with her for years, and you know, go way, way back, you know, with Viral, and you know, she is just such a talented lady, and she knows what she's doing.
One of the funniest things you did was the photo mashups at the CMAOs a few years back when you said a thing. They were hilarious.
Yeah, well, some people, you know, just have a little too much time on their hands.
But, this person married this person. Here's what their kid would look like.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
My goodness.
We're going to play one last song here, and that is Mud, because we want to say congratulations for the certified platinum.
Yay.
Thank you very much.
To the Roadhammers.
Fun record.
Yeah.
That's a really great one. So let's play that one right now. Here's Mud.
Roadhammers from Wheels and Mud. I'm John Marshall. And a quick question for you, Jason. The Roadhammers, will you be recording some more stuff? Because you had one album here, the 10 Big Truckin' Hits Volume 1, and that leads one to believe there might be a Volume 2. Would that be happening?
Well, I think there should be. Yeah, we're working on some right now. And well, actually, you know, like every artist will say, well, we're currently writing for our next record. Of course you are. Everybody's always writing. Yeah. That's what we do. We've got a couple of songs we've half recorded and then kind of changed direction. So there's a couple of half done things in the oven, you know. Mm-hmm. But we're getting close to being being done. We've got maybe four tracks, but it's not like making an album anymore. A lot of people, you know, used to buy an album and that was it. Now you just do some singles and put them out when they're ready. So you don't have to be writing 10 songs and waiting. So we're pretty much in that mode of just getting ready for another single.
There was one song that I've always loved, and I thought the Roadhammers could do an awesome job on this. It's a driving song, and it's called Bonnie Jean Little Sister by David Lynn Jones. Are you familiar with it?
Oh, totally, yeah.
I love the first line, song. Peter built a truck for a man to drive.
Yeah, right. Awesome. Not making any friends there. No. But it's a great tune. I remember when that came out, and it was kind of like a Bruce Springsteen kind of meets country music kind of vibe. And yeah, totally. And we used to do that on the show, actually, for a little while.
Really?
But, that could be a good one.
Yeah. Peter built a truck for a man to drive. It's a pretty good living, but it ain't no lie. Boy, farmer's daughter, or a drunk man's wife. Peter built a truck for a man to drive. Peter built a truck for a man to drive. Well, little sister was just 17 when she left the farm. Virgin green. I love it.
Well, let's get to the last part here because I know you've been gracious enough to spend all this time with us. So we're going to go to the question part of the Q&A for the show. And this is just you either finish the sentence or tell us what the word means to you.
Finish the sentence or what it means to me.
And good luck.
All right.
Okay. My inspiration.
Oh, caffeine, I guess.
Okay. I wasn't expecting that one. Okay. Creativity is.
Caffeine. Fear, I guess. Or is that motivation? I think that's motivation.
My dad.
My dad? Biggest influence.
Life is.
Hard and long.
Favorite guitar.
Oh, my Gibson J45.
Being yourself is.
Difficult.
When I achieve blank, then I'll be happy.
Oh, I don't know what that was. I guess, I don't know. Gosh, these are hard questions. I thought they were going to be math. When I achieve blank, I don't know. When I achieve peace, there you go. Inner peace.
Okay. Success looks like.
Oh, probably something Picasso makes. I don't know. Like, all something random.
I knew
and
there
weird.
Was going to be a joke.
Yeah, eyeballs on the same side of the head. I don't know. What does success look like? Success looks like Keith Urban's hair.
Okay, biggest mentor.
Oh, probably my dad.
Okay. Favorite Merle Haggard song?
You can't do that.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
I just did.
First time we met was a favorite memory of mine.
Okay.
Great song.
Favorite pizza?
Oh, anything that's free. Pretty Scottish. Pretty Scottish. Favorite pizza, Hawaiian, and or like the thin crust, like Asagio, whatever that kind of stuff is. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. But, you know, the fancy pizza that costs too much.
Okay. Now, what about my strength is?
Oh, geez. Okay, these are hard. My strength. What's my strength? Being a goofball, I guess. It got me out of fights in high school.
Motorcycles?
Yeah. Yes. Is that a yes or no?
No. Like what do they mean to you?
Great memories as a kid, you know, growing up on dirt bikes and stuff. So it's, what do they mean to me? I think they're just like, another part of the, you know, the toolbox of getting away. Like it's just wheels, you know?
Okay. What is a song that we would be surprised with that's on the top of your playlist right now?
Well, it's not maybe on my playlist, but it's always in my head because my daughter gets in the car and takes the radio. It's Harry Styles' Watermelon Sugar High. That's a pretty big one.
Okay. All right. And who is your favorite all-time artist that you would have loved to have performed with, past or present?
Oh, I don't know. I think probably Ed Bruce would be pretty cool, although he's pretty obscure, pretty left. But I think
love it.
I think Prince. I think I'd like to sit down and play guitars with him.
Wouldn't that be good?
You know, Post Malone, as odd as that is.
Love him. He's
here's
one of
why.
My favorites.
Because he's so wacky and out there, and he's all this, you know, goofy, wacky pop stuff. But he loves
brilliant.
Country music. I saw him jamming with Dwight Yoakam, singing Merle Haggard songs in California, in Bakersfield. So it blew me away.
Wow. I didn't know he did that.
Yeah.
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 Oh, geez. I'm going to have to watch that one for sure.
Yep.
Okay. So let's remind everybody, thank you so much for spending all this time with us, because it's really special. And you're special to me, and I know you're special to a lot of people out there. So thank you for what you do. Again, everybody can see you on October 4th for the CMA Ontario Awards. That's on October 4th at 7 to 9:30. So that's going to be a great show. So it's a drive-in style. So I think they're almost sold out on that too, aren't they?
I think so, yeah. It's going well. So cmaontario.ca.
Yes, and that's going to be at the Western Fair. So that's going to be such a great, great show. So we're all going to be watching that one, including performances by platinum-selling CCMA Award winner Tim Hicks, CCMA Award winners, the James Barker Band, and there's so many others here. With five nominations they have, there's platinum-selling artist The Reclaws, Jade Eagleson's going to be there, Eric Etheridge, The Abrams, so many. So it's going to be such a great show. And again, thank you so much for hosting it, because we're going to love it. And again, happy birthday, and such great success coming up for songs that we're going to be hearing for you going forward, as well as for the Roadhammers. So again, thank you. And we want everybody to listen again to We Are One. It's something that we just need to keep on going. It's just such a special song. And again, thank you for being such a great, great guest on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Awesome. Well, thanks for supporting Canadian country like you do. We'll chat again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so
thanks,
much, Jason.
Have a great day.
Take care. You too.
Bye-bye.
I want to thank my guest today, who is one of my favorite performers and one of my favorite singer-songwriters, and that is Jason McCoy. What a special interview that we've had. And again, thank you so much for spending all this time with us and sharing a little bit of your life and what's going on with you today. And congratulations on your certified platinum, Mud. What a great, great tune with the Roadhammers.
You've been listening to Music's Journey on musicsjourney.com. Please like us on Facebook and share us on all your socials. On our upcoming podcasts, we'll be chatting with people like The Heels, Washboard Union, Michelle Wright, Nice Horse, Drew Taylor, Carrie DeMayer, and so many more. Our theme music is titled I Can Tell and is performed by the band Emergence. I'm John Marshall. On behalf of Kim Sear, thank you for listening to Music's Journey.